It's my privilege to introduce our speaker today, who is going to give us an overview of the 12 steps. So let's welcome Pat, our speaker.
Thank you, Wanda. You pretty lady.
I'm Pat Huber, and I'm a recovering addict. An addict is an addict. I can get addicted to anything. So, I've been in recovery from alcoholism since June 21st, 1970. And I'm very grateful for that. It changed my life. I hope that this program of Overeaters Anonymous, or whatever your addiction is, will do for you what it has done for me. The 12 steps are magic. I believe that the 12 steps are designed to walk us up face to face with the God of our understanding. I came here looking for God. I can remember sitting on the side of a mountain when I was in Hiawatha, Utah, around the age of 8 or 9. And as I sat there, I was talking to God and asking God, why in the world was I even born? I was never going to fit in this world. I was never going to fit in with my peers or even my family. I just always felt like I didn't belong. So, he didn't speak to me at that point, by the way, but I think, and I've always given credit to nature. As I sit there, it's just the most beautiful scenery you've ever seen in your life. I don't know how many of you have been to Utah, but it was just, you know, it felt kind of healing to me, and still does. If you're looking for God, get out somewhere in nature and feel the peace and the serenity that comes with that. I say that to the clients quite regularly. Wanda and I do go back for a lot of years. I always had a great admiration for Wanda because she's such a lady. Always wanted to be a lady. I never felt like I was a lady. After I went to treatment when I was 16 years sober, not because I drank, but because I was ready to kill myself. Because I had daughters that was fighting the battle of this disease, and those of you that have kids, daughters, sons, whatever you have, know the pain of watching them suffer. And their mother is the last person that they won't hear anything from. I have finally reached a stage where what my daughters hear from me is, I just wanted you to know how much I love you. I'm so proud of you. I called one of them this morning that's teetering on a hard time because her partner's relapsed, and they came in together. So, you know, I know today all they need is my support. And so that's what I try to give them. And I'm sure they're glad to have it. They act kind of shocked, though, like, well, I love you too, Mother. And those are magic words for me. I believe that this disease is a twofold disease. I'm going to use this for my benefit. Those of you sitting at the back, I know you can't take notes from this. When I fixed this up, we were in a bit of a smaller room with a bit fewer people than what we have here today. But I was aware, sitting back there or standing back there, that you can't read this, but it doesn't matter because Joan said that she had every word of it copied down. So if you need to get her notes, you can do that. The 12 steps are so magical, but the first step I remember whenever I went into AA, and I started looking at those steps on the wall, and I thought, my God, I mean, what does that even mean? Well, I read it, and it said, admitted that we're powerless over alcohol, and that our lives had become unmanageable. I thought, well, I've done that. I knew that the battle that I was fighting was bigger than I was. Now, I was 26 years old when I got here. And so the battle of this disease of addiction, and I'm going to address it as the disease of addiction, because everybody in this room may have a different addiction, but the steps work, period, for whatever addiction you have. And when I'm working at Shades, I try to do the same thing, even when I'm reading from or quoting from the book. I don't know how many of you use the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I know they have the book of OA, and I have read it. But because I started with this book, I have a tendency still to want to use this book because it was the first book came out. And of course, I think they know more than anybody, but I know that's not the truth. But the book says, if you'll turn to page 544, those of you that haven't, and this is the story that I read when I began to know more about my own addiction and the truth, and I believe the truth is what we're looking for. Now, the step says, admitted we were powerless, and I put even in that our addictions, and our lives had become unmanageable. My life had always been unmanageable. I wanted to do good, and I was screwing up on every corner. You know, I was a rebel. So, when I read this story, beginning there, at the mental twist, I knew that that was what was wrong with me. It says the mental twist that led up to my addictions began many years before I ever got become an addict. For I'm one of those whose history proves conclusively that my addiction is only a symptom of a deeper lying problem. Do y'all believe you have a deeper lying problem?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what do you believe that deeper lying problem to be?
Core pain.
Self-hatred.
I am my own problem. But the problem is I didn't learn how to love, honor, cherish, and accept the God of my understanding, number one. But even after I got to the place where I could do that, I still didn't love me. I believe that the treatment for addiction is learning to love, honor, cherish, and accept yourself. I don't care what your addiction is. Whether you're a compulsive overeater, you will learn to feed yourself in the manner. In other words, I've had a bit of a compulsive overeating disease myself. Instead of just gobbling down my food and eating more and more and more because it gives me a little bit of comfort, what I have to learn is I've also got to look at the results. Is this who I really am? Is this who I really want to be? So we're looking for our own truth. So it goes on to say that through my efforts to get down to causes and conditions, actually I already went over that, I stand convinced that the emotional problem has been present from my earliest recollection. I never did react normally to any emotional situation. When I had an emotional situation, I went goofy. I screamed and hollered and had fits, and then I had to look for something to ease the pain of my own reality that I myself had just created. So it says the medical profession would probably tell me that I was conditioned for this disease by the things that happened to me in my childhood. We have to go all the way back to the beginning in order to see our truth. It's not anybody else's fault of the way I reacted, but it did have an influence. Both of my parents were alcoholics. My father was a compulsive overeater, although he was in my life for just a short period of 5 years. And then I had 14 different stepfathers. My mother was the marrying kind, but my mother was anorexic. So was my grandmother. So whatever we choose to ease the pain of our own reality can become an addiction. I smoked my first cigarette when I was 5, set the prairie on fire. My mother made me smoke a cigar, trying to break me from smoking them nasty cigarettes, because she smoked. And I never did quit smoking cigarettes till way later in life. When I finally loved myself enough, I said, I don't want to do this to me anymore. We got some people probably in here that has more than one addiction. The reason for that is we have an addictive body chemistry. We're addicts because if it makes us feel better, we want some more and some more and some more. I don't care what it is. We have people that are sex addicts. Mm-hmm. You know, we can just go down the list and name a lot of things that you can get addicted to. You can get addicted to water. Wanda will remember this, I'm sure, when we were working together at Shades of Hope. We had a lady that they would bring from Hendricks Medical Center to Shades of Hope. We put her on water restriction, and of course, when I first went out there, I thought, this is about the goofiest thing I've ever seen. We put her on water restriction, and did you know that she would sneak off and get in the shower and stand there and drink water until she'd be laying in a fetal position somewhere. We'd find her, have to go back to the hospital. Too much of anything's not good for her. Mm-hmm. So we have to be careful, and we have to learn to watch what we're doing and try to do what we do. I think there's a book even bigger than ours that says moderation. So if we're over here, if we're over here, it's not good. You can eat yourself to death compulsively, or you can starve yourself to death over at this end, if we can bring it somewhere in the middle. Now, Wanda is the expert on eating disorders, although I think that she would agree with what I'm saying. I don't know. We had some differences then, because I thought the only real disease was alcoholism. Yeah, but if you'd done this and did what I did, you can get crazy on alcohol, and you can just get out there and get some false courage. You can get out there and do anything. I think maybe compulsive overeater's a little sneakier. Mm-hmm.
Amen. It is.
It doesn't quite show. It doesn't cause you to. Mm-hmm. You'd have to. What I find is, over these 40 plus years, we're all just the same. So, I'm going to go over that last part a little bit again. The medical profession would probably tell me that I was conditioned for alcoholism by the things that happened to me in my childhood, and I'm sure they would be right as far as it goes. But the program has taught me that I'm the result of the way I reacted to what happened to me as a child. What is much more important, the program has taught me that through this simple program, I may experience a change in this reality pattern that will indeed allow me to manage calamity with serenity. I think that's what we're all looking for. I wanted to live a serene life. My life was the furthest thing from serenity, because I was a rebel and I was acting out on everything. Now, little by slow, most of that has changed. Me. I don't react like I used to react too often. You know, there's two things that has just plagued me. One of them is my mouth and the words that come flying out of it. I've asked God this morning, already to let only his words come through my mouth. Not mine, because I'm liable to say something that would shock somebody. Sometimes it shocks me. What did I say that for? But aren't we more alike than we are different? If you're looking for your place in life, you just kind of have to get it. You know, we'll go into that here just a minute. The real problem is, that would be me. This is the deeper line problem, the failed relationship with myself. I have to learn how to love, honor, cherish, and accept God first of all, and then myself, and myself has been the hardest for me to learn to love. And then when I can love God and love myself, then I can love others. Because what you are is mirrors for me. What I see you doing that bothers me is something I need to look at. Now then, let me tell you, for you that are striving for perfection, that's an excuse for you to say, well, I can't ever be perfect anyway, I just as well quit. Right. Here, I've done this. I've overeat too much. I've undereat too much. You know, nobody likes me anyway. That's not the truth. We've got to learn to love ourselves. Now, it tells us in our book that our addictions is only a symptom of this deeper lying problem, so we have to look at the causes and conditions. The emotional illness, the reaction pattern, I never did react normally to any emotional situation. Because I was driven by 100 forms of fear and self-delusion. It tells us that in the book. Now, I was self-centered. I had a human ego that was out of control. Self-hatred. I just hated myself. So, these are the feelings that we have on the board at Serenity House. Fear, anger, pain, guilty, lonely, shame, and out of ease. When we are in our disease, we can scratch this off. We do panic, rage, we're absolutely emotionally ill, shame, isolation, and we want to self-destruct. Has anybody ever said everybody would be better off if I wasn't here anyway?
Oh, yeah.
That's what I was saying when I went to treatment when I was 16 years old. I didn't want to drink. I didn't want to do anything. I just wanted to die. So, this is a killer disease. Now, the problem is that we're ill at ease, dis-ease, away from ease. But the problem in the body is that we have a physical allergy. Hear me when I say we have an addictive body chemistry. And this leaves us in a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. The mental obsession. My, like to have never stopped thinking about the ease that I found when I used alcohol. You know, I've become the life of the party. So, I took a drink, and the drink took me. How many of you have a problem with sugar?
Oh, yeah.
You take a little bite of sugar, and that little bite of sugar will take you to eat the whole dead burn pie. Right? Doesn't it? Now, I'm powerless over this, so it is my powerlessness. What else lives in your mind besides that mental obsession that will not let you forget that sense of ease and comfort that comes from that bite of sugar? Fear and shame about who I am. Scared to death somebody's going to find out. Oh my God. Negative messages. Unloved, unlovable, and unworthy of even being on the planet. Breathing up somebody else's air is what I used to think. So, when we come to the end of self, we find that I'm living in insanity, not sanity. Let's look at the mental twist. The book talks about that. It says the mental twist that led up to my addiction began many years before I became an addict. So that's why we have to go all the way back. This mind of ours, this mental twist, you know, I finally got this, that I am both spiritual, having a human experience, but I'm this and I'm this. Now, if I'm in this all by myself, which is where I was, fear, it was the self-hatred and everything that goes with that. Now, my mind was just consumed with fear. Fear of everything, everybody, fear of school, fear of my classmates. They weren't going to like me. They were going to find out how stupid I was. And that's why I'd isolate and withdraw. So I was spiritually ill. And I didn't know how to react to God, to myself, or to others. So I disconnected from this little part of myself. I grew on up there, here this little precious child, the authentic child, became very selfish, self-centered, vulnerable, dependent, and needy. It was born that way, incidentally. Now, the precious, authentic child still is right here. But what we're looking for, we're looking with. Because when this little child got wounded, it disconnected from this part of itself, 0 to 9, false emotions appearing real, and became frozen in fear and panic and anger and rage. Now, the wounded child got stuck in that. So 0 to 9, when it was living in the emotional part, somewhere in those years something happened that caused you to just leave yourself, really. Mm-hmm. I can tell you what mine was, but you need to look and find yours. Mm-hmm. Now, left untreated, which it was, I went on, you know, it takes 21 years for the mind to fully develop, and left untreated, it's dangerous, because, you know, if we're not a danger to somebody else, we're a danger to ourselves. So, when this little individual here hits about 21 or prior to, some of you are not even 21 years old. How many is not 21? God bless you. I'm so glad you found us at this young age. But you're going to have to learn to love yourself. That is the key, and it's the hardest thing you've ever got to do, isn't it? One of you. Okay. This little person here, after it had cut loose from this little part of itself, it takes off out here and it recreates itself in the image and likeness of addiction. You look like it, you smell like it, you act like it. You know, I used to jokingly say, I thought I was making a joke whenever I said to Tinny, compulsive overeating is just like drinking. I tried to tell people, I am not drinking, I'm falling down drunk. Compulsive overeating shows just like drinking. So we're going to have to look at that. Or you don't have to. But in order to live in recovery, you might decide that you want to. What we're looking for is the truth. Who am I really? Is this who I am? Is this the way I'm supposed to act? You know, where do I belong? Where do I fit in life? But step two says, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. It's not hard for me to see that I was totally insane in my addiction. So I need to be restored to sanity. Who am I really? I think everybody in this room probably lets yourself that. In order to get free, there is a solution. This power that is greater than us is twofold, just like the problem is twofold. The first thing we have to do is connect with other people of like kind. You know, I tell people that come into Shades of Hope, we have to stop isolating. You know, you want to isolate, withdraw, and just be by yourself and let that old tape just keep on going, telling you you're not worthy of nothing. Who do you think you are? You just will kill yourself while I'm that. So you can do that. You're forced to do that, I might add, at Shades of Hope. Because you have to go get into the fellowship. This morning I'm driving along, look up, here's the van full of people. One of my other things that still plagues me is I just whipped around them and I waved at everybody. And I looked down at my speed limit, and I was going a little bit too fast, but I'm kind of in a hurry, so it was okay for me to do that. But I need to connect with these other people in the fellowship. Look for the similarities, my sponsor used to tell me. I'd be sitting in a meeting and they're talking about being in prison and, you know, four times and this and that and other, and I'd say to her, well, I've never been in prison. She'd say, go look for differences. Look for similarities. Should I have been in prison? More than likely. I won't say more than likely. Let me make a real honest statement. Yeah, I should have been. Why I wasn't, I don't know. I suppose it was because maybe the God of my understanding didn't think I needed that experience to do what I do. I don't know. But I'm grateful that I didn't have to go there. Okay. The people at Shades of Hope and the fellowship, your job is to point others in the direction to have this vital spiritual experience or awakening that is necessary to bring about recovery. To find this God of love, I've got to talk about that just a minute. A God of love, not a God of fear. Lord have mercy. I had a God of fear that wouldn't quit when I got here. He was watching every move I made. And I felt like every time I wiggled, he'd put that thumb on me and I'd get out from under it and he'd get me in here. God of fear. I think, oh my Lord, I'm going to hell in a handbasket. And I had to find a God of love. Now I had found this dear friend of mine that she'd been asking me if she might could come to something that I'm doing on the 12 steps. And I told her this morning after I found out this was, you know, open to everybody, that she could come if she wanted to. I went to work at Langford Sewing Factory. I don't know if anybody in here is old enough to remember Langford Sewing Factory. But that's where I went to work. Bless her heart, there was a table, only it was higher than this one. I could see her head and she could see mine, but I thought, that is the nicest lady I believe I've ever seen in my life. Oh, I wish I could be like her. And we'd visit a little bit, you know, and I'd say, well, I used to ask this all the time, what church do you go to? And she told me, and I thought, if they can do that for her, I'll be there next Sunday. So I went next Sunday. But the God of fear, when I got there, scared me to death. Yeah. You know. I'm not saying anything bad about that church, except that's when my alcoholism even got worse. That God of fear. So, I tried my best to stay there. I don't know. I think maybe I was there a couple of years. And I got drunk one night and went to the church, laid all night on that altar praying, God, you know, do something with me. I don't even know what's going to happen to me. Help me. And I would try to talk to her, and they all give you the same, well, you just need to, you know, most of them will say you just need to repent and be baptized. I've been baptized 5 times. And there's no telling how many times I've repented. Still do. Because like I said, this mouth, you know, this morning I asked God, please let your words come out of my mouth, not mine, because, you know, I don't want to shock anybody. But that God of fear just had me drawn up in a little knot. And I strove for perfection as much as anybody I know. In that particular church, well, it was all no's. Anything you asked about, could you do? No. Like, smoke or drink or this or that or the other. And so I absolutely stopped all of it. Couldn't have a TV in your home. You couldn't wear pants. You couldn't wear makeup. You couldn't then, I mean, down the line. And I still love that church. But I can't live like that. The 12 steps and the desire to walk you up face to face with the God of your understanding may walk you up face to face with a God different than the one I'm going to be talking about today. Maybe you can find it there, but I couldn't. And every time I'd screw up, I'd get drunk. That was the what gave me relief from that. You know, kind of like every time we screw up, if we're into our compulsive overeating, we'll overeat because that's as close to mother's love you can get. It just nurtures you. As soon as you overeat, you can go lay on the couch, take a nap, come Thanksgiving or whatever. And then those of you that really detest yourself to the degree that you'll just starve yourself to death. We have some of those here today. Oh, I wish you could see yourself through my eyes or through God's eyes and see your worth and value. You know, the youngest case that I've heard of anorexic was a little 5-year-old boy, and they asked him why he didn't eat, and he said, well, they didn't have very much food and he wasn't worthy of it, but his sister was. So he gave it to his sister. That just brings tears to my eyes today, because that's how real this disease is. And a person that is strong-willed enough to starve themselves to death, boy, they're hard to break that. How many of you in here are anorexic? I mean, my heart just goes out to you because I can see the outward beauty. But see, that's not what we're talking about. But I also can see the inward beauty. People walk up to me all the time and say, Miss Pat, I feel like you look inside me. I said I do. But I don't see what you see. And I can try to tell them what I see and who I see. And, I mean, their face will get red and it just totally embarrasses them. Oh, if you really knew me. You see, I really do know you. Because there's not any addiction that I haven't experienced to some degree. My number one was alcohol. It was quick and fast. But I've also... Wanda has seen me when I was up to 185, I think, is my highest weight. Well, you know, that maybe not. You see, morbidly obesity is if you're 50 pounds overweight or 100 pounds. 100
That's
pounds.
Baby, you're baby.
But the feelings, you know, were the same. you know, it was like, I don't give a flip about me.
Nice soup.
So, but anyway, what I found in step two was hope. In step one, I was totally hopeless. And hope was what came with that, the willing to be willing. Hope turns into faith, and faith turns into trust. I'm going to talk to you about the God of my understanding. If this doesn't fit for you, don't even listen if you don't want to or whatever. But the God of my understanding is, and one morning I was sitting there, and this was after my mother died, and I was sitting there doing my prayer and meditation. She'd been dead maybe a year, because see, I wall off until I don't experience the experience, until I'm able to deal with it. I didn't shed a tear when my mother died. I stepped into my, you know, take care of business person. My sister had already died, so it was up to me to take care of this, and I got everything done and got somebody to come and do the last rites. And so about a year later, I'm sitting there one morning, and I could feel my mother's presence. And what I heard was, I love you, baby. The only time I ever heard those words come from my mother's mouth was when she was under the influence. And she'd throw that arm around my neck and kiss me on the cheek. Come here, you little freckle-faced fart. Don't you know your mother loves you? And it was sickening to me. I thank God don't love me. But that morning I could feel her presence, and that's the word I heard. I love you, baby. And that's when I began to know how important it is as parents that we say that. Not that necessarily, but that we let our kids know how much we love them and how important they are to us. And those of you that are too young to have any, you will someday, more than uncle. So, I pulled out the Bible. Oh, I didn't pull it out. I was sitting there in my meditation, praying and thinking about this. And it was like what went through my mind is, get the Bible. Now, I put the Bible up a long time ago, because I'd read one page and it would tell me one thing, and then I'd turn the page and it would tell me another. So I thought it was kind of confusing, so I thought, I just don't need to read that right now. But that morning it was, get the Bible. And I thought, I don't even know where it is. But I got up finally and went to looking for the Bible, and whenever I found it, I went into my prayer, back to my prayer chair where I have that set up, and I turned to Matthew, because even before I put the Bible up, I had stopped reading the Old Testament because I felt like it was so hard to understand. And back in those times, I'd also studied some commentaries, and during the study of the commentaries, they explained to me about that at that time this was the way they thought and felt and acted and stuff like that. So anyway, it was like, no, go to the beginning. And I thought, God, I don't want to go to the beginning. I've read about the begats and the begats and the begats all I wanted. But I went to the beginning finally. In the very first chapter, it talks about God. It says, and I quote, check your Bible if you don't believe me, let us create male and female in our image. And I thought, now who in the world would he be talking to? Let us create male and female in our image. And it hit me. God is both male and female. Which is one of the problems I've had with trying to turn my life and will over to him. Because I thought, if he's created me in his image and likeness, and I'm a female,
right,
then I'm second-class citizen. But that morning when I read that, I thought, my Lord, God is both male and female. So, I have to draw pictures of anything that I'm trying to understand. So I drew this little picture because I had studied and knew enough about that God is love. I'd already got that through the first of the 12 steps of AA. And if I'm created in God's image and likeness, which is what it said, the image of God doesn't have a form of a body, it's a spirit. And the likeness is love. This is my understanding. You deal with yours. But this spirit of love is my little soul and your little soul. In my opinion, I'm speaking from my own mouth here, but I ask God to give the guidance for us. So my first creation was, I was created in God's image and likeness. Now, this little spirit came off over here, found a mom and a dad, and this is my second creation. Created in my parents' image and likeness. Their image was they gave me a body. If you could see my mother standing here beside me, you'd see who I look like. My mother, well, anyway, I don't need to go there. But her likeness, bless her heart, was totally filled here. She tried to raise my sister and I, and she had to work two jobs a day to put food on my table. And there was lots of times we didn't know where the food was coming from or where the rent money was coming from. And I can only imagine her fear. She's, oh my God, I don't know what we're going to do this month. You know, I don't have the money for the rent. Now, something always happened. And if she could be with you today, she would tell you that. But my mother did that. She would not have even considered going to welfare or something like that. She never did. But she would make it some way or another. So, you know, I looked at my dad. My dad had a very sensitive soul. I got my right arm, I'll remember this for all my life, blistered because I left my arm hanging out in the car. You know, I was trying to be big. And it burned. We were coming from Amarillo to Anson. And when I got there, it was just blistered, had blisters on it. And my dad, I remember, sat up all night soothing my arm, putting lotion on it. Mad at my mother, of course. If she loved you kids, you wouldn't be. You know, and I got that from her, and I got that from him. Because they all wanted to be number one, I finally figured out. But anyway, so I saw his little sweet soul, but I saw my mother's sweet soul and her determination that she would do it. She wasn't going to welfare. And she did it. Now, that was my second creation. You know, somewhere in there, as we talked about a minute ago, somewhere between the years of 0 to 4 was where I got one day. Maybe it could have been 5, but I was a very young age. And so my attitude became very negative after that. That's where my wounding happened and the trauma. But this little kid that was created in their image and likeness had that little sweet soul that I described to you. But the physical body, I looked like my mother, but this was more like my dad. My mother did not believe in God. She said. But my sister had to have brain tumor, and we were in the hospital, and when I started looking for my mother, she came out of the chapel. And I thought, now what are you doing? And she said to me, I've never said a prayer in my life. But I just said one for Shirley. And tears in her eyes. and I could see that when it came down to the nitty-gritty, even Mother believes in God. So I bought her God Calling book and gave it to her. I don't know how many of you read God Calling. It's a daily meditation. How many of you read One Day at a Time? Go to March 3rd. It just happened. In that book, it says that you're going to have to give me a minute because I just went blank. Oh, it says, look at me. Think of me often, and unconsciously you will become more like me. But you may never see it. I'm going over that again. But you may never see it, because the closer to me you become, the more aware of unlikeness. No, the closer to me you get, the more aware of your unlikeness. To me you will become. So be comforted, my children, because my strength is made perfect in your weakness. Look at me. Think of me often. And unconsciously you'll become more like me. You're not going to see it, because the closer you get to God, the more aware of your unlikeness to Him you become. But be comforted, because God's strength is made perfect in our weakness. This little person, after I got into drugs and alcohol, I became somebody I didn't even know. I would stand and look in front of the mirror and I'd think, my God, what's happening to you? This
will break in 5 minutes.
In 5 minutes? Okay. Thank you. I didn't know that. Because y'all were going to go to the restroom and stuff. One of the clients, I said, y'all mean you just left Shades and you had to go to the restroom as soon as you got here? Oh, Rick says, well, they pump us full of water and then he's in the van and send us up here. Which is true. But anyway, I tell you what, since you said that, I'm going to lose my train. So why don't we just go ahead and break now, and then when we come back, I'll see if I can catch the train again, okay? So